We're going to talk a little bit about movement screening. I work with a company, Fit to Train. I'm a physical therapist, as John mentioned. What we do is we do a lot of injury prevention work, and we do a lot of lecturing too as well for functional movement systems. So with respect to the functional movement screen as well as the selective functional movement assessment. So one of the questions that we tend to ask of our athletes is, are you fit to train? And by athlete, I mean anyone who's training and has goals. So it doesn't necessarily mean whether or not you're going for a high level sport, or maybe it's that an athlete that's working towards being able to play with their kids. We don't make the distinction between sport and just everyday activity. If you're active and you have goals, we define you as an athlete. So one of the questions, as I said, we ask is, are you fit to train? And that comes as a little bit of a loaded statement. I ask you guys to ask that of yourselves right now, and even to think of that in terms of the athletes that you work with. And maybe if we just do a little bit of a thought experiment and have you imagine yourself on Monday morning, you have a new athlete in front of you. What are some of the questions that come to mind in terms of whether or not you're ready to train with this individual? And probably, hopefully, you're going to look at some things like potentially whether or not someone's had an injury in the past. So for example, if someone's fractured their ankle and they have hardware in the ankle, that's going to change how much closed chain dorsiflexion they have, which is going to have significant implications to what it is that you're going to use for your training regimen, right? You need to decide from that whether or not there's certain exercises that you want to do or exercises that you might not want to do. And throughout the presentation, I almost want you guys to kind of think, a lot of the courses that we teach, we come up with the principles of thinking of what, why, and how. So we're going to talk our way through that as we go along today. Other things that you might want to look into is a medical assessment, so a review of the systems to make sure there's not any red flags or contraindications to training with that individual. You're probably going to want to do some sort of tests, so whether that's metabolic stuff, whether that's performance-based measurements. And often we think of like strength, power, those sorts of things when tests come to mind. We're going to try to throw in a little bit more and get you guys thinking along the lines of doing screens for movement. Activity levels, so past, present, what the person's training history may have been in the past, what they're doing right now, what they're doing in the training environment as well as in their day-to-day are all going to have effects in terms of what you're looking at the end of the day. And we want to take all this information and synthesize that into what we're going to do for the goals of this individual. Because at the end of the day, we got to come up with some sort of prescriptive program in terms of defining what it is and how we're going to train this individual. And the term functional training gets thrown around, and often we think of like, well, when I hear it, I think of a lot of stuff that you see in the gym where people just throw a bunch of different stuff at people and they're hoping to make some sort of adaptation. To me, functional training is defined by what it produces. So if you can make a change in what your goal is, that's functional to me. But that means at some point we need to have some sort of standardization to define what it is that we're actually trying to change, okay? And I think Greg Cook in his book, Athletic Body and Balance, he introduces the performance pyramid. And I think that gives us a good framework to decide in terms of what it is that we're trying to accomplish with our training. So if you look at the performance period along the bottom, we have movement. And that's comprised of mobility, stability, as well as like things like proprioception, so flexibility, joint range of motion, and whether or not you're able to control your body segments through that range of motion. And on top of that, and it hopefully doesn't exceed the movement foundation, is our performance variable. So things like strength, power, speed, agility, that's the stuff that we do already as strength and conditioning coaches, and we do that fairly well, right? But a lot of time what we tend to see now is you hear about all these non-traumatic injuries that happen in sport. Well, what that is often you have these athletes that are overpowered. And I use the analogy of trying to take like a Ferrari engine and put it in a Tercel body. There's nothing wrong with the engine, there's nothing wrong with a Tercel, but when you put those two together, you're going to blow apart the components, right? That's often what we see in our athletes, is a lot of time we have athletes that are overpowered, that don't have the requisite movement as a foundation in order to control their body in space, and they end up sometimes leading into situations where they're going to injure themselves. Top of the pyramid is skill. And that's the sport-specific stuff, right? That's, you know, if you want to get better at volleyball or soccer, at some point you need to go out and you need to hit some balls or kick some balls, right? So that means from that, we have exercises that are going to be designed to improve movement. We have exercise that's going to be designed to improve capacity or performance. And we have exercise that's going to be designed to improve skill. And we need to figure out where, in terms of where we are in that scale, what we're going to address or how we're going to address it. And I think that's where screening comes into play. And the best example of screening that I can give you is blood pressure. You go to your doctor, they take your blood pressure, it comes out, let's say, 160 over 90. That's all it tells you. It doesn't tell you necessarily the why, it tells you the what. Red flags being waved in your face, blood pressure is high, we should do some more tests to figure out what's going on here. Because it could be that this person has high salt diet. It might be this person just went through some sort of emotional trauma. Maybe they didn't sleep well the night before, or maybe they just did a bunch of exercise before they came in for the test. My point is that you need to be able, at this point, you need to do something else to determine what's going on. A screen just tells you whether or not someone's at risk, okay? And that's what we want to accomplish with the movement screen. We want to check to see whether or not, is this person at risk for a musculoskeletal injury under our watch? And with other medical exams, and same with blood pressure, we have cutoff points in terms of defining what is adequate. You know, what are we happy with? What are we willing to let go here? And with vision, we have, you know, a certain amount that we want to be able to have. Like, say, if you were to go to the Department of Motor Vehicles to get your eyes checked or to get your driver's license, they're going to do an eye check to make sure that you're not going to be a hazard to anyone on the road, right? We have a certain standard or a cutoff point that we want to have. And that doesn't matter whether or not you're an 80-year-old or a 20-year-old, that cutoff is the same. The difference is if you're, because, well, we should have the same thing for movement, right? We should have a cutoff that's standardized whether or not you're 80 or 20, and that should almost be predicated by what it is that the activity of that individual that they're going to be doing, right? So if we have an 80-year-old and a 20-year-old, they're going to have different vision. But at the end of the day, if this 80-year-old is going to get behind the wheel of like an Indy car, we want to make sure that they can see fairly well, right? Same thing goes with movement. If we have an 80-year-old and a 20-year-old, we're going to expect that the 80-year-old doesn't necessarily move as well. But if this 80-year-old is going to be competing in CrossFit or a marathon, we're going to want them to have a certain baseline of movement that they need to be able to achieve before we give them the stamp of approval to go out and train from there. And that's really where the movement screen was developed. So in the photo, it's Keith Fields on the left, Greg Cook's in the center, Kyle Kiesel's beside him, and then Lee Burton on the right. But the movement screen was developed as a way to bridge the gap between the physical or the medical examination and then the performance test. Because it used to be guys would, you know, they go in for their physical, blood pressure's good, there's no sort of underlying red flags, and then we're out on the field and we're going into a 40-yard dash to assess their performance from there. The screen is that transition point. We're trying to see whether or not there's any red flags in terms of how this person's moving before we start to load them up with volume and intensity, okay? It's designed to pick up microtraumatic injuries. So the runner who goes out and is fine when they run 3K, but when we ramp up their volume to 5K, all of a sudden they have like a back discomfort. Well, maybe it's something that's coming from their hip, that they don't have terminal hip extension, so they don't get the sensory signal of the stretch of the hip flexors to reflexively get them to go into flexion. So all of a sudden now they need to hip hike every step of the way to get through there. And at the end of the day, the back is the microtraumatic injury that gets the blame but wasn't necessarily the problem. And overall, the goal is if we can address some of these movement restrictions and limitations, that means we can spend more time in the trenches doing our training without any injury. And inadvertently, we're going to improve performance from there. Because at the end of the day, it comes down to sport-specific stuff. You need to do your sport or activity in order for you to get better at that. When we look at research studies, the one thing that comes up from an injury standpoint for a future injury is previous injury. That's the number one risk factor. So it tells us two things. One, you get injured, you're at higher risk for injury. There's not a lot we can do from that. But the other thing that it sort of, if you scratch beyond the surface, is it probably tells us that as clinicians, and unfortunately I'm guilty of this and I'll get under the bus for the rest of my profession, often we don't do a good enough job doing our rehabilitation. The discharge criteria for a lot of physios ends up being, or any other clinicians for that matter, ends up being whether or not someone's in pain. And as soon as pain's gone, that's it. You're okay, we get you back out on the field, but we haven't necessarily reloaded the software in these individuals. And the one thing that we know from research standpoint is that when pain comes on, it changes how people move. And it doesn't necessarily do that in a consistent fashion. We'll either get facilitation, we might get inhibition, but the one thing that is consistent is we get a change in terms of what the firing sequences are, what the patterns are. And when pain disappears, that stuff doesn't necessarily come back to play. We need to do something at some point to reload the software in these individuals. The other thing that we get from research standpoint, it tells us what a predictor for injury is asymmetries. And the thing with a movement screen, we're not going to go through the entire movement screen today, but I'm just trying to get you guys thinking that you need to do something to assess the individuals you're working with. The thing with the movement screen is we look at right and left differences. So we can address those asymmetries. So it means if you have a flat tire on one side, we can put a little bit of air in there before we get you out running around doing laps on whatever it may be. And again, the goal overall from that is that it's going to guide our exercise prescription, our progressions. If you guys haven't had a chance to check out this book, Movement by Greg Cook, it's a phenomenal resource. I highly recommend go to your library, pick up a copy, do something to get the information that's in there. In it, he goes over screening, assessments, corrective exercise strategies, and just the overall philosophy in terms of why it is that we need to have some sort of movement-based standard in our profession, whether that's as a strength coach or a clinician. And functional movement systems is comprised of sort of three things. We have the functional movement screen. We have the selective functional movement assessment, which as a clinician, that's the tool that I'll use to address whether or not someone has pain from a non-traumatic injury. Is there something in the way that they're moving that's causing them to have the discomfort? And the last thing we have is a test within that. And the three of those things together create what we call a standard operating system. So a screen, a test, an assessment. And a screen is, as I mentioned before, the blood pressure cuff. It just simply tells you whether or not someone's at risk. It's a filter system, okay? From there, if there is a red flag, you need to do some sort of test to figure out what's going on. And a test is basically just a way for you to judge ability. It doesn't tell you the why or anything like that, but it tells you yes, no, someone has the ability or doesn't, okay? It's basically doing a judgment, it's doing an interpretation without putting a judgment onto it. And when you get into doing assessments, that's when we start to have more of an interpretation to what the score of the test actually is. So what we're asking is, you need to have some sort of baseline, a fundamental starting point that you can say, okay, this is adequate movement. So from there, we can all agree from there to say this is dysfunctional movement and this is something that we need to address from there, okay? And it's not meant to change anything that in terms of what you're doing currently. A lot of like what we do as strength and conditioning coaches is good. We're just asking that you put in an extra step and we have some sort of, we talked about it in Andy's presentation there, just having some sort of objectivity to something as subjective as movement. There's been a fair amount of research done on the functional movement screen. So Rob Butler at Duke University has done sort of a compilation of where the research findings are for the FMS. And we've shown that it's a reliable tool. So inter-rater reliability is about 80%, which for a clinical assessment tool is pretty good. It's been shown to be valid. And we'll talk a little bit about the scoring of it, but there's 7 movements. You get a highest score you can get is a 3, so it makes it the best you could get would be out of 21. In research, it's about a 14 that comes out in terms of what puts you at a higher risk, and it's anywhere between 2 to 8 times the risk. Now, that's in high-level activities, so professional footballers or firefighters. We don't have data at this point to show where that stands for the general population, but that's something that'll probably be coming out in the next little bit. The other thing that research has shown us is that it's modifiable, which is great, because that's what we do. We do change in people, right? So if this is something that we can change, if we can bring down someone's risk of potential injury, that's a good thing, right? And what we use is a lot of time is we use the neurodevelopmental model. So we look at reloading the software of how someone moves by taking them back to their fundamentals. If you think of a baby when they first learn to move, they start off with rolling patterns. From there, they end up going into a supine, from supine into a prone position. They start pushing up where they first start to develop their abdominals, so reversing that C curve that you came into the world with. And then they go into hip hinging patterns, right, to start working on developing their glutes from there. So often we'll put people in quadruped patterns to work on stability issues for their hip, right? And then eventually we get into the more functional stuff from there. The last thing that research has shown us is that there's not really a good correlation to any specific performance measure when we're looking at the screen, which, if you think back to the performance pyramid that I showed you earlier, makes sense. We're looking at 2 different things. We're looking at movement on one level, which doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to improve performance from there. You still got to go out and get under the bar or do some volume and intensity training in order for you to make changes in someone's performance. So when the screen was designed, we wanted something that was going to allow us to put objectivity to something as subjective as movement. So when we do our certification courses, we go over specific bullet points that need to be met for each of the individual movements to allow you to know whether or not someone scores at an adequate level, subadequate, or dysfunctional from there, right? It's designed to be body relative, and it's easy to use in any sort of setting. So you can do it with minimal equipment, as little as a piece of tape and a dowel, and you can be able to get some sort of objective measure as to how someone's moving from there. And then as well, we also have an online database that if you're certified, you can compile and add into the results so that this is a ever-growing database from there. So this is it. This is the screen in its entirety. So we got 7 movement patterns. And we look at the top 3 here as being our functional patterns. And by functional, I just mean upright and weight-bearing. So we look at how your core functions in parallel stance, single leg stance, and then also split stance. So if you think of the single leg stance, the hurdle step, this is like a snapshot of running, right? So you want to make sure that your runners out there, that they can score well on this. The inline lunge is putting you into a crossover pattern. So this is for like your multi-directional athletes, right? Whether or not they can control rotational forces when they're changing direction. And this is a system. And so like any good system, it's got an inherent feedback system within it. So it checks on itself. So if we don't catch people with dysfunction on the top 3 patterns, we have our bottom 4, which are fundamental patterns. So here we look at more mobility-driven patterns, so reaching for the upper body, reaching for the lower body, and then stability patterns as the bottom 2 here. So the trunk stability push-up, rotary stability. And like, if you think in terms of patterns of movement as opposed to muscle by muscle or necessarily joint by joint, can you see how the stepping pattern and the leg raise are very similar in terms of we have one leg that's in terminal extension, the other leg that's gone into flexion, the difference being whether or not the knee is extended from there. But in terms of a pattern of movement, they're very similar. It's a dissociation of the hips, right? The difference being one's weight bearing and the other one's you get some assistance from the floor. This I can't stress enough. The screen is not meant to be used on people who have recognized pathology. It's a screen, right? If someone comes to you and they tell you they have back pain, they're not someone who needs a screen. They're someone who needs an assessment, an orthopedic assessment from there, a clinical evaluation to determine why it is that they have that back pain. Giving that person a screen is almost like, use the analogy of you see someone smoking a joint in the back corner, you bring them over to do a drug test. It doesn't make any sense, right? If someone has pain, we're not going to do a movement screen on them to see whether or not they have pain. We know they have pain. They just told you. The other thing is it's not diagnostic, okay? It's a screen. At the end of the day, if you want to do diagnostics, you need to do further testing. And that's where we get to as we go into higher levels in terms of how to figure out what's going on, whether or not someone has a mobility-based problem or whether or not they have a stability-based problem. Because from a movement screen standpoint, those two things will look exactly the same. I alluded to this earlier. It's a 4-point scale for scoring. So any individual could score anywhere from 3 to 0, and there's specific set criteria for what determines whether or not someone scores a 3, a 2, or a 1 on the hurdle step or the deep squat for that matter. But essentially what they're gonna get scored is they get a 3 if they can do perfect movement. So you can't make that any better. That's good enough. They get a 2 if they can do the movement, but there's some sort of compensation that happens in that. So whether or not you need to give them some assistance to get into that, or it's just not good enough. But they can get through the entire range of motion for the movement. What we're really trying to catch with this is the 1s and the 0s. So someone who has a dysfunctional pattern, because that's going to put them at a higher risk, or someone who's in pain. Because as I mentioned earlier, the one thing that we do know about pain is that it's going to change how the person moves, and it's not necessarily consistent. So we start off by asking whether or not you're fit to train. You guys probably had a bit of a thought process in terms of what came to mind as to whether or not you deemed yourself yes or no, whether that was just subjective. What I'm asking now is we need to have some sort of objective measure, whether it's the functional movement screen or some other form of assessment that you do in order to determine whether or not someone is truly fit to do the activity that they have in front of them. And generally speaking from there, after doing a screening process, you need to have some sort of testing, some sort of assessment if necessary to get a little bit more of a judgment and interpretation as to what's going on. That puts them into whether or not you've going into conditioning exercise or corrective exercise. And when we talk corrective exercise, we're looking at changing how someone moves from a fundamental level. When we talk conditioning exercise, we're looking at improving their performance from there, adding on speed, power, all those sorts of things, okay? And what the goal of the screen is to open up the lines of communication between different areas of practitioners so that as a strength coach, as a clinician, as a medical professional, we can all sort of agree and talk amongst ourselves about what it is that is determined to be adequate movement or what is dysfunctional movement from there. And the goal is at some point is to have some sort of way to, within your system, to recheck itself, right? So if at the start of the season, we do a screen on an individual and they score 17 out of 21, we add on a strength and conditioning program, and then come mid-season, we do a rescreen. There shouldn't be any change in terms of how they're moving. If anything, they should move better from the strength and conditioning program. We shouldn't see any regression from there. So that's my talk.